It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School Podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered. Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, put me in a wheelchair and get me to the show. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And Lauren, we've given the day off. Lauren was feeling a bit under the weather, perhaps bacteria had something to do with it.
Mm.
Or maybe she just felt like it was too soon. But today we wanted to talk about bacteria, microbes, and ways that we have found to get these microscopic organisms to do stuff that either they wouldn't normally do, or they would do it, but they would do it at a very slow rate, and to ramp it up so that we can actually make use out of the microscopic world.
Yeah, it's interesting, the idea of trying to get microbes working for us instead of against us, since, you know, we've all experienced plenty of setbacks in our lives due to what bacteria have to offer and their arsenal.
But some food poisoning in there or something.
But yeah, in fact, one of the major culprits of food poisoning, E. coli, is going to pop up a lot in this podcast.
Yeah, it's hard to stop E. coli from popping up, as it turns out.
That room temperature hot dog is...
Yeah.
It's just...
Boy, that potato salad that's been left out for a while, that's still good,
it's
right?
The future of engineering is what it is.
In fact, there's some applications we'll be talking about where the reason why we're looking to bacteria in the first place is because we don't know of any way to synthesize the materials that the bacteria produce naturally.
If we do, it's like really inefficient.
Really inefficient, really expensive, very, you know, time and energy consuming. So it just makes way more sense to go with the bacteria. But there was at least one of the articles that we read where specifically they said, we cannot synthesize this in the lab. And I think, well, we probably should say we can't synthesize it today.
Right.
Maybe sometime down the road we can, but it makes way more sense to pour the money into research and development with bacterial organisms that do produce this stuff and find ways of making them do that at a much larger scale than what they currently do. And then we reap the benefit that way.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's one of the biggest challenges really is figuring out how to optimize these processes so that you get a usable amount of stuff, something that you can use in manufacturing, for instance, or producing drugs. We've been doing that. I mean, we use bacteria to produce insulin. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, insulin for people who have to do insulin injections, a lot of that insulin's generated through bacteria. So.
Through bacteria that's been genetically tampered with, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
We reach in there and we lift out part of a plasmid and replace it with a piece of human DNA that creates insulin.
Exactly. Yeah. Essentially, you got to remember DNA. That's like instructions. It's almost like a program.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of it, if you're thinking in terms of computers, you can think of it as an algorithm or set of instructions that tell a cell.
Yeah.
There are words that are coming from me. a cell. So this is where Lauren would jump in if she were here, but you know, she's battling her own bacteria. This is where a cell would end up following these directions to, you know, saying when this happens, do this. That's essentially, you know, like an if then kind of function. And, if we switch those instructions out, then that's what the cell will do. That's drastically oversimplifying what's going on, but if you take a really high view of what we are trying to do, that's essentially the step. You try and find the little segments of DNA that you can use to swap in and out for these various kinds of bacteria and get the results you need. And E. coli turns out to be one of the ones we use the most frequently. And you might wonder, you know, well, you know, I've heard about E. coli everything I've heard about it is essentially that it's bad, you don't want it.
It's in your uncooked hamburger. It's why you need to ruin your hamburger before you eat it.
Right, yeah, because you don't want to, you know, by ruin it, I think Joe means that cooking it till it's well done.
Yeah.
As opposed to medium rare.
Yeah.
There are restaurants in Atlanta now where they won't do it medium rare, or at least they won't. They say on the menu they won't do it medium rare.
Well, a lot do, and they just have the little disclaimer there. It's like, you know, but you might die. But
right, yeah.
It'll taste good, and you'll be happy when you die.
So we're going to talk a lot about E. coli. That means that I thought a quick history lesson on E. coli was in order. And so in the late 19th century, there was a German pediatrician who was looking into why babies were dying. They had a symptom of diarrhea, and they were dying, and he wanted to find out what it was that was causing the diarrhea.
Are you talking about Ignace?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about Theodor Escherich.
Oh, I thought we were going down the Ignace Semmelweis.
No.
Totally distracted.
Theodor Escherich. And
okay.
If you wonder why it's called E. coli, Escherich. That's his last name.
Oh,
it's actually, Escherichia coli is the full name of E. coli. And so it comes from this guy, Thomas Escherich.
What an honor.
Yeah. Yeah. He was trying to figure out how, you know, what was the mechanism that was causing these babies to become sick, and how could he fight that?
Okay.
And so he was looking into it, and he found what he thought was the causative agent. And he thought it was an organism that was causing this, because he was following the germ theory of illness.
Pretty good theory.
Yeah, it was a good theory. Not everyone at that time subscribed to it.
No, certainly not the people who jailed Ignace Semmelweis, right?
Right. Right, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, there were those who were pursuing this line of thought, and there were those who were denying it. He was pursuing it. And he ended up discovering what he called Bacillus communis coli, which now we all call E. coli. And it was actually named that after his death. And we call it a model organism. And the reason we call it that is because there's been so much study of E. coli that we know everything about it. Mm. We know the full genome of E. coli. And also, it's a great example of something that you can work with in a laboratory, because laboratory conditions, it can grow in a very wide range of conditions, but it does really, really well in just room temperature. Mm-hmm. So you can grow it very quickly. It has a very rapid growth rate, so it has very simple nutritional requirements. We know all the genetics about it, so.
And you mean literally all the genetics?
All of it.
About it.
It's completely mapped out.
Okay.
Completely mapped out.
So it's kind of at this point like open source BioWare, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You can look at this as saying this is the slate we can build on. It's not quite a blank slate, because we actually do have to remove stuff and then replace it with other stuff in order to make the E. coli do what we want it to do. But it means that because we have such a deep understanding of this particular organism, it's perfect for some genetic modification so that we can make it do other things.
It's the Linux of germs.
It kind of is, yeah. It's a little penguin-shaped bacteria. It's not quite penguin-shaped.
It's shaped like a hot dog, actually. It's
exactly shaped like a rod.
Like a room temperature hot dog.
Yep. Oh, good times. So, so anyway, they're using E. coli for lots of different things, including producing various kinds of chemicals for both drugs and for manufacturing processes.
Yeah. So we mentioned that it can make ethanol, which is the alcohol that makes your wine awesome or your beer awesome, or it can help make insulin, right?
Yeah.
For drugs. What else can it do? What else can it make?
Well, let's see. It can make Isoprene?
Isoprene, yeah. That's like jet airliner fuel, isn't it?
It's also like the stuff that can go into rubber.
Yeah, so, like in your tires?
In your tires, yeah. Uh-huh. So, I mean, you can get isoprene in different ways, right? You can do it essentially the way we get isoprene, get lots of stuff. You can get it from fossil fuels,
oil.
Essentially. Yeah, you go to oil, you sit there and say, well, this is yet another byproduct we can get out of oil, petroleum-based stuff. But, you know, that's not necessarily environmentally friendly. And it's true that you can also genetically engineer E. coli to produce this stuff. In fact, it produces a little bit on its own. So really what we're genetically engineering it to do is produce it.
Beef it up.
Yeah, exactly. Much larger amounts for it to be efficient because, you could start to harvest it from E. coli, but if it's just tiny little amounts, it would take forever for you to have enough for it to be useful. It wouldn't be a good use of your time and resources.
Mm-hmm.
But by genetically modifying the E. coli, you can dramatically increase the output and thus make it something that's a viable option.
So it's making this carbon compound, isoprene. What it is, a carbon compound, right?
I'm assuming. Hydrocarbon, yeah.
Yeah, hydrocarbon. All those, like the plastics and all the things we make from oil. Mm-hmm. Tend to be that, right?
Right.
So what's the investment in this? Do you just need to feed the bacteria, basically? You just give them some sugar based on corn or sugar cane or something like that?
It essentially is that you feed them certain chemicals, mm-hmm. and then they will produce the isoprene, and just in their regular process of life. You know, it's just mm-hmm. it's a life process for them. So it does mean altering the cells a little bit so that they will do this on a scale that makes it useful. But yeah, they're essentially eating and pooping is what they're doing. Except
all right. But they poop something really awesome.
Right. And it's microorganism level. So it's not really eating and pooping. That's again, kind of just putting it analogous to a macroorganism.
Mm-hmm.
But for the purposes of this conversation, sure. They eat stuff that is not as useful to us and crap out stuff that's really useful to us. So that could give us a very environmentally friendly way of producing isoprene on a level that's important enough for the manufacturing processes. Right now, you know, they're mostly in the research and development phase of that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also seen bacteria producing other stuff. You pointed me to a great study about bacteria that produces gold.
Yeah, gold. I saw this and I was like, oh, you know, finally the medieval alchemist's dream is realized.
Yeah, from a microorganism level.
From beyond the grave, they're groaning with envy, like, oh.
Shucks,
you know.
If only we had found that.
Right. Well, apparently what they found is that there is a bacteria that can turn something called gold chloride, which is this toxic chemical.
Yeah, anything that has the word chloride in it tends to be pretty nasty for people.
Well, hey, what about sodium chloride?
It tends to be. If you break that molecular bond and you now have pure sodium and pure chloride, that's two things that are really bad for people.
But I mean, you put some sodium chloride on your lunch, didn't you?
No, someone else did.
Well,
I didn't add any. I get enough sodium in my diet.
Right. Okay. Well, but it takes old gold chloride, which is this some kind of nasty chemical. I mean, I've never handled it, but
it's a toxic chemical.
I read that it's something you don't want to mess with.
No.
Turns it into 24 karat gold.
Yep.
Just pure gold.
Yep. Well, 99.9% pure.
Oh, okay.
There's a 0.1% impurity.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that old soap commercial, 99.9. But it's interesting because you'd think, oh well, does this mean you could produce lots and lots of gold?
Yeah, is this going to upset the whole gold market?
Well, no,
it's not. Even though this is pretty amazing that they can do this, the reason it's not going to devalue gold and turn the world economy on its head, though, I mean, that wouldn't have the effect it once had now, I guess.
Yeah.
The reason that's not going to happen is the same problem we discussed with isoprene and other stuff, right? It just it can't make enough fast enough yet that it really matters.
That and gold chloride's not exactly, you know, falling out of the sky. If it were, we'd all be dead. But it's it's not plentiful, and it does like in the article you linked me to, they actually talk about how. While one scientist say it takes something that's useless and or worthless and then turns it into gold, the guy who wrote it pointed out that in fact gold chloride costs quite a bit of money to purchase because it's not.
Is it even more than gold?
Not more than gold.
Okay.
You would still have a winning proposition by the end of it, but it's not like it's cheap. It's not like it's this weird, you know, we don't have these gigantic pools of gold chloride sitting just under the surface of the
it's like
ground.
Somebody was like, hey, I found a way to turn Action Comics number one into solid gold.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more like, hey, I found a way of turning kryptonite, like this fictional element into gold. Oh, all right. Well, excellent. But it's still, you know, it's kind of a neat thing in that. It's another one of those processes that could one day become useful should we have an easier way of getting gold chloride.
Well, I think it just illustrates that it's not just this chemical, like bacteria can create all kinds of chemicals.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, we've talked about, different kinds of medications. There are a lot of other drugs that are, possibilities that bacteria could create. So it's one of those things where we could create these little micro factories. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we could even create micro factories that could work in vitro. Like we could have microorganisms that you would inject into a person to treat diseases like cancer.
Oh yeah, yeah. What were we reading about these drug delivery bacteria, right?
Right. So again, the bacteria would have their normal natural processes altered by switching out some strands of DNA, and what they would end up doing is they would consume regular stuff, but they would end up producing cancer-killing chemicals, and you would coat the bacteria with a protein. That would essentially turn it into a cancer-seeking bomb. So it would seek out cancer cells by the proteins would essentially lock the proteins that are on the surface of the bacteria and the proteins that are a part of the cancer cell would lock together. So it would attach itself to a cancer cell, produce the cancer-killing chemical, and deliver essentially chemotherapy to the cancer cell directly.
And the reason without damaging all the surrounding tissue.
Right, because that's the big problem with chemotherapy, right, is that chemotherapy, when you introduce chemotherapy to a cancer patient.
It's not smart.
Yeah, it's not smart. It attacks everything, right? It's not just attacking cancer cells, it's attacking healthy cells as well, which is one of the reasons why chemotherapy has so many nasty side effects, why people have to deal with feeling nauseated and having other really really terrible symptoms while they're trying to fight cancer. Well, if you were able to create a delivery system that would deliver the chemicals only to the cancer cells, you would drastically reduce those side effects. You wouldn't necessarily eliminate all of them, but you could reduce them so that the quality of life increases dramatically for the person who's undergoing that treatment.
Of course, from what I read, this research is really promising, but it's also not without danger, right? Because these little mini attackers, you know, the tiny gunships, if they get loose, they do actually possibly represent a threat to people.
Anytime we're talking about introducing something that's going to have an ongoing active role within a person's body, then clearly you have to be really careful about how it's going to interact. Whether that means it would produce toxins that would hurt the person directly, or maybe it would have an unintended consequence. For instance, it might kill off a cancer cell, but perhaps something else it gives off ends up causing other problems. Like it could even perhaps cause cancer. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you know, there are all these things that have to be taken into consideration. You have to do lots and lots and lots of testing before you can ever get to a point where you even have a patient try this out. Same thing is true. And, you know, maybe we'll tackle this issue in a future episode of Forward Thinking, but there are viral therapies out there too. That
they do pretty much the same thing, right? With tumors, like they can be targeted to attack.
Yeah, you can get what you essentially do is you take a virus, you crack it open, you remove the virus from its shell, you put into the shell some, chemotherapy drug.
And a virus, just to be clear, like, it's not as complex as something like bacteria. It's basically like a shell with some DNA in it.
Right, yeah. In fact, virus is so not complex that we don't really have a classification for it. Like, it's not easy for us to classify it as life.
It's debatable whether it's life. I mean, it's debatable about it reproduces, but not on its own.
Exactly. It's kind of in this interesting category all on its own. But you could do the same similar thing, You could do the same thing mm-hmm. where you coat the virus with the protein so it seeks out the cancer cell and mm-hmm. then injects the chemotherapy drug directly into the cell. Now, in this case, the virus is not producing the chemotherapy drug. It's just a delivery system. So it's like a very smart injection. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other one we're talking about would actually be producing the drug inside of you as part of its natural process.
Though we were careful to make a distinction between bacteria and viruses, so maybe we should save viruses for
right, exactly.
For
like
day.
I said, maybe we'll tackle
that's
that.
That's a whole other topic.
Yeah, we may tackle that in a future episode. Just saying that the approach for cancer treatment is similar but not identical.
Right. So we've talked about how bacteria can be used to manufacture materials and can be used in medicine, but a little bit of what I've read has something even more interesting, that it can be used for efficient purposes in electronics.
Yeah, I was reading some of the articles you sent to me, and they are very interesting. I'm a little curious about a couple of them. One of them was about how bacterial nanowires could end up being a revolutionary electronic development. Mm-hmm. And that got me a little curious, because as soon as I heard nanowires, I thought, wait a minute, now bacteria, you know, you're talking about a single-celled organism. Mm-hmm. That's not the nanoscale. That's huge compared to the nanoscale. But they were specifically referring to proteins.
These little fibers that grow off of the bacteria, right?
Yeah, protein filaments, which are much smaller than the bacteria. So once I mm-hmm. got into that and I saw what they were talking about, I thought, oh, I see what they're saying. The filaments themselves are on the nanoscale as opposed to the bacteria. Nanowires, if you're thinking about the actual mechanism where electrons are getting carried across, it would be across these little filaments. That I have no problem with. I'm not sure that the wires themselves would be on the nanoscale, because I would imagine the rest of the bacteria would be there too. But maybe it's just that I'm having a hard time visualizing exactly what they're talking about. But yeah, you could grow nanowires this way. And again, this could make it very useful for all sorts of applications, including things that would need to operate within an organism, because mm-hmm. electronics, it's kind of hard to get the traditional electronics to operate inside an environment like that. Same thing with underwater sensors. Anything that would normally cause a problem because of shorting, the way the bacteria are able to bond together with these protein filaments could get around that. So that's something that's a promising potential application, keeping in mind that this is in the earliest stages of research and development.
Right. We can already use bacteria in some types of electronics, right?
Like
that there are bacteria that can be used to sense the presence of humidity.
This is kind of interesting. Yeah. You're talking about there's this bacteria that you coat with nanoparticles of gold.
Yeah.
Which
unfortunately,
I guess,
this eventually kills the bacteria, but.
But it doesn't matter. It'll still work.
Yeah, so, who cares? Yeah.
Or at least it works. It works, according to the scientists who researched this, it works up to a month after they have died. They called it zombie bacteria. But you use gold nanoparticles.
This is zombie cyborg bacteria.
Yeah. And if you need,
if
you want to.
If this is not a sci-fi movie, what is?
First, you start with the gold chloride and you give that to the gold-making bacteria and
okay,
take that gold.
And they make the gold, and then what do you do with the gold?
Well, you actually have to get it into the, you know, make it nanoparticles. You have to get
right.
to, and on
tiny,
the,
tiny bits.
Yeah, on the nanoscale, elements can have very different properties than they would on the macro scale.
Right.
So, for example, silver already has some antibacterial properties to it, but on the nanoscale, those are very greatly emphasized. So you actually can find bandages that have silver nanoparticles in them because it'll help fight off or keep a wound infection free.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. But, you know, the same is true across many elements, that when you get it down to the nanoscale, they start to exhibit different features.
Well, okay, so we're talking about nanoparticles of gold.
Nanoparticles of gold, and they essentially coat the bacteria so that it creates a way for an electronic charge to move, or electrical charge rather, to move across the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So you think of the bacteria as just kind of a little blip in a circuit.
Yeah.
Now, if that bacteria encounters water, it starts to swell. Now, the gold nanoparticles are actually on those little filaments on the outside of the bacteria, right?
So it's like the bacteria's beard.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's like a, you know, think of it like a hedgehog with these little bitty gold nuggets on the end of all the little bristles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that hedgehog starts to expand, the bristles start to move further apart from each other, and it creates gaps between those gold nanoparticles. So if it creates enough gaps, then that electric charge can't move across the particle the way it did before. And because you're talking about a very, very tiny organism, you can get some pretty incredible sensitivity on here. So you can detect very minute changes in humidity.
Wow.
Which could be really useful for certain things. Like imagine a library that has rare works in it that need to be protected at a certain level of, you know, dry air, and anything below that level, anything where the humidity rises too much, mm-hmm. would be a danger. Then a sensor in that environment would be very useful. Also, same thing's true for things like clean rooms where you're yeah. putting together microprocessors, things
cigar
like that.
Cigar stores.
Obviously. Obviously, cigar stores. I mean, I don't know how I left those out.
Okay, so we've got bacteria manufacturing chemicals and
yep.
materials, manufacturing drugs, and we've got them working in electronics
mm-hmm.
and electric circuits and the propagation of electrons. Can they do mechanical work in any way that's useful?
Well, I wouldn't bring your beat-up old Chevy to any bacteria.
Just hand the E. coli a wrench.
Yeah, that's
stick the wrench in the uncooked hamburger.
But oddly enough,
get to work.
Oddly enough, yes, they can do some mechanical work. Whether or not this will ever reach a point where it's useful, I mean, I'm sure it will. When you talk about miniaturization, if you get things down small enough, you need to have some way of powering them, right?
Oh yeah, if you have a little microfluidic machine, I mean, you're going to have gears that need to operate on the micro scale.
Yeah, if it's working on a mechanical basis, obviously. If it's working on a chemical or something, then that's different. But if it's a mechanical device, then yes. So, the interesting thing is that the Argonne National Laboratory did an experiment where they made these teeny, teeny, teeny tiny gears, like mm-hmm. like I think they're 3.8 microns across.
By the way, you should go look this up and watch this because the video is really cool.
Yeah, yeah, there is a video. It's on YouTube, and also you can find it in lots of different articles. We'll link to some in our blog. But the interesting thing here is that they found that by putting different levels of oxygen into this mixture, they could induce the bacteria to push across the gear's arms and propel them around in a circle. So
they could create a stream of bacteria teaming in a certain direction, I think.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
by doing that, if they oriented gears properly, they could turn the gears.
Yeah. Essentially, the bacteria would hit the end, like the point of a gear, and then stick with it and actually start to slide inward toward the center of the gear while still moving forward. So it actually would turn the gear.
Mm-hmm. But what I want to emphasize is how crazy the scale difference is here.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about bacteria, which are tiny, tiny, tiny.
Yeah.
Moving something that's tiny to us, but much larger.
Millions
than
of times
yeah.
the size of the bacteria.
So it's bacteria, which you cannot see without a powerful microscope, moving something that's bigger than a dust mite.
Yeah. Which
that's amazing.
Yeah. So you'd have to think about, you know, get all the people you have ever seen in your life together and moving the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about, and even then, you're not talking about millions of times your size, right? So it is a pretty phenomenal thing. And if we're able to make that useful in some way beyond getting hits on YouTube, that's awesome.
No, I think it's awesome either way.
Like Joe just
even if it's just
Joe
YouTube,
just stares at me like
I just stared at him like you? Yeah, I'm going to punch you after
you?
This. Well, no, in the next podcast we're actually going to talk about one amazing possible future application. But
yeah. But these are, I mean, if we've talked about. Or at least we've all heard about things like nano machines, mm-hmm. you know, whether they're nano robots or whatever.
We always imagine them as synthetic. They're little things we build, like little robots that.
Right, but we could end up using a mixture of synthetic and biological. In fact, it's far more likely that we will use biological material in those devices because nature's built some pretty amazing tiny things that work really, really well.
Well, we have – I mean, one thing that I talked about when I was writing this episode of the video series is that it's funny how we have total intuition when it comes to engineering things on the proper scale.
The macro scale.
Yeah. Things that are about the same size as us. This all makes sense. You know, yeah, this gear turns. This thing – it all just works. It makes sense. It's
yeah. It's natural. Intuitive.
Yeah. When you get down small enough, that all breaks down. You just can't do it. We're not good at making things that work on a tiny, tiny, tiny scale.
It requires such a level of precision. And also the rules, if you get small enough, the rules change.
Yeah.
So, but if we look to nature, you know, there are already examples of stuff in nature that show that this can work. And so either we can take that and manipulate it in some way, or we emulate it in some way, and therefore can make our own nano machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that a lot of our, at least our early work in nanotechnology, will still focus on the biological element, and it won't be, you know, because that just makes more sense than to go completely synthetic.
No, I totally agree.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up our discussion about kind of the crazy stuff that we're doing with microbes and bacteria. If you guys have suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, you know, there's something about the future that you're really interested in. There's an application or a technology, or maybe it's just something that you're concerned about and about our future. You want us to address it. You should let us know. We have an email address. Our email address is fwthinking@discovery.com. Or go to fwthinking.com and just check out, we've got the blogs there, we've got the videos, we've got this podcast is there. We also have links to our social media. You can get in touch with us on any of those platforms as well. We'd love to hear from you, and we look forward to talking to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School Podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, Then, listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we are changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. Start your week with the Hello Monday podcast. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered. Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.